Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, a special report on the colonias of the Rio Grande Valley.
I've been through a lot of areas in the county, colonias, and some of them are in halfway good shape.
It smells like sewage, kind of, and the water's like yellow, like if someone just left pee there, like in the tubs or whenever you open the faucet. You know.
That's what your taxes are supposed to be for basic infrastructure.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. A colonia is a community along the U.S.-Mexico border that typically was created with the illegal subdividing of property without basic infrastructure. So the homes in a colonia may lack running water and sewer systems. The colonias typically don't have paved streets and there's no drainage, so flooding is frequently a problem. Accessing emergency services is tough because there are no official addresses. An estimated 500,000 people live in thousands of colonias along the Texas-Mexico border. Largely built between the 1950s and 80s, state laws have been passed to try to prevent new colonias from sprouting up. But because of today's affordable housing crisis, colonias are seeing a comeback. Texas Public Radio's Catalina Cuellar shows us the struggles of life in a colonia.
Despite significant progress to better them over the decades, colonias are still defined by their worst moments. But the story of colonias, specifically in the Rio Grande Valley, involves more than squalor and neglect.
I think that it's also in America's success story, the development of colonias. So I'm not going to poverty pimp the colonia idea, because enough people have. And I think that that's been to the psychological detriment, I think, of a lot of us.
That's historian and CEO of the Museum of South Texas History, Francisco Guajardo. He lived in a colonia as a child and now specializes in the area's history.
The story of colonias in South Texas is really something that predates the war, meaning World War II, but it does not become pronounced until after the war.
Pre-World War II, the valley had a booming citrus industry, with acres of oranges and grapefruits covering the flat, flood-prone land. But the region isn't ideal for citrus crops, which take a long time to grow and are prone to dying during extreme climate events. A series of freezes right after the war confirmed that. That's when many landowners, especially farmers, started selling their properties, and there was an eager customer base.
And it just so happens that you also have a lot of working people who don't have a lot of income, and they're attempting to, you know, reach their American dream. And many of these came from Mexico, or many of them may have been second generation, but they want their piece of land.
Landowners capitalized on this demand, but before selling the land, they stripped and sold the topsoil, which made the area even more flood prone. Then they subdivided the land into residential plots and sold them, as is, at a steep discount, to all of those working people trying to reach their American dream without a lot of money.
Maybe you can come up with $1,000 to buy a quarter acre in this startup neighborhood that doesn't have running water, doesn't have electricity, and doesn't have paved roads. And so those are the colonias.
Because many buyers didn't have enough cash and their credit was often too poor to finance their purchase, they'd sign contracts that made it so one missed payment could result in a foreclosure, and they couldn't get the deed until they paid off the property. Sometimes sales happened under the table, so purchasers didn't even have any legal claim to their property. Guajardo's family moved into one of these neighborhoods in the mid-1970s after getting priced out of public housing.
Middle school for me and then high school was in a colonia. Elementary school was in the federal housing projects. No comparison. Federal housing was like the Taj Mahal.
His family moved into a trailer home on their new plot in a colonia outside of the city of Elsa. Like many colonia residents, they had to essentially build their own utilities. His family even dug the hole for their septic tank themselves. But neighbors helped each other.
Other people are moving in as well. And so we're all like sharing in the same sort of electricity and, you know, like completely rigged. It was like the most beautiful thing because it's like resilience, ingenuity and all of this.
From the 1960s to the 1980s, Colonia development peaked along the U.S.-Mexico border, and not just the valley. People were building their homes the only way they could afford, piecemeal and slowly.
You know, it took a while, but we built a house. And that was, like, you can't build a house if you don't have the land. And the effort, the idea, the vision, the hope, the dream of the land is really the magic.
But building houses was far from the only hurdle. These developments were located in rural county areas, not in city limits. There were no water or drainage systems or street requirements that are usually mandated and paid for through city taxes. Cities eventually annexed some, and in some cases, clusters of colonias even became cities. Colonias started banding together to ask their public officials for basic needs.
That's what your taxes are supposed to be for basic infrastructure. So really all you're doing is you are asking for what is right, which is I contribute to this community. You public officials, would you please contribute to my neighborhood so that my truck won't always be needing new tires?
Congressman Quique de la Garza of South Texas led the initial charge for changes to colonias at a federal level and faced some resistance when presenting his proposal to provide federal aid to colonia communities. At the hearing, Congressman Joseph Kennedy II said other lawmakers worried that helping colonias would promote illegal immigration, but the bill passed and is still helping improve conditions in colonias. Because of de la Garza's advocacy in the 1980s, the federal government released a first-of-its-kind report that assessed conditions in these areas. The feds reported that around 200,000 Texans lived in 824 colonias in 1990. Only 60% had water, and only 1% had sewage systems. And the rates of diseases like hepatitis A and tuberculosis were double that of the rest of the state. Today, it's estimated that about 500,000 people live in more than 2,000 colonias in Texas. While residents still face many of the same problems, Guajardo said fixating on the negatives is harmful.
Hay mucha gente bien necesitada en las colonias todavía. No question about that. But the colonias, though, are also places of hope. And I think that's the point.
The Guajardo family is one of many that found a way to overcome some of the obstacles unique to colonias, many of which go beyond the lack of infrastructure. Colonias started and continue developing in the most rural parts of the region, while some older colonias have been incorporated into the urban sprawl overtaking the area. Others, old and new, still live far away from basic services and businesses found in more populated regions. But some residents aren't waiting for chain restaurants or auto repair shops to arrive. Bent Tree is a new and growing colonia on the outskirts of San Benito. It's on the rural side of the expressway, where some of the valley's older colonias are. And the only chain stores are Dollar Generals, which have only recently appeared. But in the colonia, business is booming. A small row of cars for sale lines the entrance to the neighborhood. Nearby, three brothers run a car wash and welding business out of their home. And in the empty lots next door, people from all over the valley set up tents and sell food. Bent Tree gets so packed on the weekends that it looks like a flea market. Maria Cordero and resident Aurelia Iracheta moderate the Bent Tree sales and services Facebook page. Iracheta said that despite a lack of brick and mortar stores, business is constantly happening in the neighborhood.
We have dinner, food, lunch. On the weekends, there's menudo, barbacoa, tamales.
The Facebook page informs its more than 13,000 members about commercial activity in Bent Tree and the surrounding colonias. Although it's now a major hub for information, the page started as a way to unify residents to advocate for streetlights in the colonia.
What started as a necessity to pass on information from an organization lent itself to many other situations. Illnesses, needs, employment, offering services, and that's why the page has so many people now.
Cordero said the page encourages people to start their own businesses.
There are people that began selling tamales veracruzanos from the beginning, and so other people who also have a talent for cooking and think, well, that lady sells tamales, maybe I can sell sandwichon.
And now, other colonias like El Ranchito have their own Facebook pages. Iracheta said that people from other colonias like Cameron Park regularly come to Bent Tree to sell their goods. On the page, they've even seen vendors from Houston and Matamoros.
And that's what sellers always say. There's a space for everyone on the page.
Cordero said another major business, raffles, dominates the local market. In these raffles, people chip in small amounts of money for a chance to win something. The seller randomly picks a winner.
That within itself is a business, it's its own micro business.
She said they're popular because they allow the seller to profit, while individual bidders pay very little. Iracheta said smaller colonias like La Paloma depend on Bent Tree to conduct their raffles.
Las vecinas prestan sus casas.
Neighbors let them borrow their houses to conduct their raffles here because people here support each other.
Like colonias of the past and present, Bent Tree is composed of mostly low-income Mexican-American families of varying documentation status. Border Patrol is ever-present in and around the neighborhood, so many feel at risk. But, Cordero said, the community works hard to keep it a safe space, even online. Documented residents protect those who aren't. Additionally, Cordero and Iracheta screen people who want to join or sell on the page.
We have a lot of fear because there are a lot of vulnerable people in the colonia. That's why we try to be cautious in every respect.
Iracheta said anyone in the colonia, regardless of their documentation status, can thrive if they work hard.
Here, those who want will overcome. Over in the projects, there's lots of people who go looking for help with their rent, their electricity, saying, we're U.S. citizens, we deserve it. But here, Mexican citizens come and say, I need help with rent. Will you please buy some popcorn?
He said the page is also used to gather donations or free supplies to give to those in need. Sometimes vendors will ask the page moderators to promote their goods in exchange for items. That's how Iracheta got free masks for the community during the height of the pandemic. The colonia has been a cradle for many successful businesses. Gabriel Jimenez, a Bent Tree resident, opened Taqueria El Mante 12 years ago and now has two locations. He's even employed Bent Tree residents and is a regular patron of elote booths in the colonia. This level of entrepreneurship isn't exclusive to Bent Tree. According to Lyft Fund, which is a small business lender in the area, it's granted almost 8,000 small business loans to colonia residents along the border. Despite this, Marlene Rodriguez, the organization's business development officer, said there are barriers to helping business owners in colonias.
A lot of the times they don't want to share a lot of their information, personal information, or they don't know whether they're asking the right question or they're approaching the right person.
Many turn to predatory lenders that deal in high-interest loans because the process is fast and doesn't require a lot of applicant information. These types of loans can result in financial ruin. Rodriguez said it's been a challenge to gain the trust of colonia communities, so they rely on nonprofit organizations that work with colonias or promotoras like Iracheta to help them engage with the community. Iracheta has seen Bent Tree residents find success despite dealing with poverty, language, and documentation barriers. She wishes this tenacity was recognized.
That's something in all of Texas we need to change. We're so good at getting the worst of people, but not at recognizing all the good.
If people want a realistic view of life on the border, Iracheta said, they must include the positive. A desire for more positive coverage of their communities is pervasive in Colonias. But even some of the most optimistic residents, like Iracheta, recognize their problems are serious beyond their control. Iracheta and thousands of others get their water from Military Highway Water Supply Corporation, which is a nonprofit created in 1973 to bring water to Colonias. But today, the Water Corporation's infrastructure is falling apart. As a result, many of their customers have had to deal with foul and even toxic drinking water for decades. And despite widespread poverty, they're still forced to pay some of the highest prices for this basic need. Now, several hundred Colonia residents are suing the company that they allege has routinely ignored their pleas for help and even ushered in a predatory market that profits off the problem.
30 minutes before the meeting.
Araceli Palomino was one of 9 customers at Military Highway Water Supply Corporation's most recent public board meeting. She and the others were tired of the brown, contaminated water that runs through their taps.
So I don't think you want to pay $200 a month for dirty water, for dirty that is damaging your family.
In 1973, Military Highway Water Supply Corporation became the first big rural water supplier dedicated to providing water to Colonias. Today, they operate 4 water systems across 2 counties in the Rio Grande Valley. Palomino and her family live in a colonia called San Pedro in Brownsville and get their water from the company's largest water system, Las Rusias. The system serves approximately 20,000 people, and its customers pay up to 3 times more than those of neighboring public water systems.
Yes, you want to help the colonias and stuff like that, but not like that. Not killing them by little. That's what they're doing. They're killing us little by little.
In the nearly 15 years the Palominos have lived in San Pedro, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality has issued the system 82 violations, including multiple instances of illegal levels of carcinogens in the tap water. Palomino has spent years trying to raise awareness of the issue.
You know, we talked to the commissioners, we talked to the mayors, you know, you make copies of it. You know, we went all the way to the senators, the governor, but nobody seems to care.
She and more than 450 of her neighbors are suing Military Highway Water Supply Corporation, alleging personal injuries and even deaths due to exposure to toxic substances in the Las Rusias system. The most prevalent of these toxins is arsenic, which naturally occurs in the area's soil and leaches into groundwater. The water system regularly exceeds the federal maximum allowable arsenic level, which is 10 parts per billion.
Arsenic increases the risk of many diverse types of diseases, including cancers and non-cancerous diseases such as cardiovascular disease or diabetes, and even cognitive impact.
That's Dr. Tae-In Roe. He's an assistant professor in the Biostatistics and Epidemiology Department at Texas A&M. He studies the health impacts of low-level arsenic exposure in drinking water.
But at this moment, even many scholars think current 10 parts per billion is not enough to protect the public health.
Roe said that research shows ingesting even legal amounts of arsenic over long periods of time may cause diseases.
So we are living in the same place for a long time, and we keep consuming the same source of water, that water that accumulates in our body ultimately.
That's why other states like New Hampshire, which naturally has high levels of arsenic in its soil, lowered the maximum contaminant level to 5 parts per billion. If Military Highway Water Supply was held to that standard, it would have been violating the law since 2001. Dr. Roe said arsenic is hard to remove, especially when the system's infrastructure is dated, like military highways. In 2017, the company began operating a $3.9 million reverse osmosis microfiltration plant with the express purpose of removing arsenic from the water. But it hasn't worked. In 2021, the system had the highest arsenic levels on record, resulting in a fine of around $5,000.
The system is not upgraded or kind of aged infrastructure, as you mentioned, then it cannot actually efficiently remove the water contaminants.
Palomino and her family no longer consume the water. Instead, they buy water to drink, brush their teeth, and cook with.
I go like for 3 to 4 packages of water a week.
And that's not the end of her expenses. Her water frequently comes out brown, which stains her laundry. And she's had to replace multiple sinks because the hard water damages them. Some customers say that when they've gone to the company's office to show how the water has ruined their belongings, they've been handed single-use portions of laundry detergent. Records show official complaints about water color and odor go as far back as 2003. Customers across the military highway water supply systems say they've seen more brown water come out of their faucets in the recent years. The company blames the aging infrastructure and occasionally flushes the lines to clear up the water. Meanwhile, water filtration and softener companies have profited from the poor water quality. Residents across the system say these businesses frequently visit their colonias to sell products. Water Bros is one of them. Earlier this year, one of their Facebook ads started with, quote, "Military Highway Water Supply Corporation water is one of the most polluted waters in southern Texas," end quote. County records show that the companies that finance water filtration purchases often put liens on customers' homes. This happened to Edgar Flores' mother, who had a water filtration system installed in her house in a colonia in Harlingen. Flores said the filter didn't work, but the company wouldn't take the equipment back. So when he wanted to buy the house, he ended up having to pay the lien on his mother's home. And the water is still bad.
It smells like sewage, kind of. And water's like yellow, like if someone just left pee there, like in the tubs or whenever you open the faucet, you know. Sometimes it looks like almost like peaks coming out.
In recent years, the company's received about $3 million from the government to update Las Rusias water lines and treatment plants and replace storage tanks. It's also hiked up prices. Flores says he's had to accept the situation because he has no other options.
It's upsetting. There's nothing we can do, and they know there's nothing we can do, and they're pretty much going to say, if you don't want it, just don't pay for it and then not have water, you know, so we're kind of stuck with it. There's nothing we can do.
Military Highway Water Supply Corporation did not respond to multiple interview requests for this story. It's previously denied all allegations. In 1988, the first federal law passed to address living conditions in colonias brought resources to municipalities to create and improve infrastructure in these communities. It also resulted in county offices entirely dedicated to the issue. Anthony Kovacevic headed the first of these programs in Hidalgo County. While they made great strides in bringing water and water infrastructure to colonias, today the issue of dilapidated infrastructure is even more critical because of climate change. As it exacerbates extreme weather events, like hurricanes, he expects their effects will especially devastate colonias.
So you got floodwater in line, and that's what causes contamination. So you get a hurricane here, everybody's going to have to boil water.
Another crucial infrastructural crisis is housing quality. Most homes in colonias are not up to code or built to withstand extreme weather events. This has already affected some colonias. Earlier this year, a tornado hit a colonia in Cameron County called Laguna Heights. One person died after getting crushed by a trailer, and many more lost their homes.
I mean, they lost everything, but nothing was anchored to the ground or anything. So I thought about that. I said, what's going to happen when a hurricane runs through the valley and blows everything away?
Kovacevic said he fears this level of devastation was not just because of the tornado strength. He suspects the poor housing structure contributed to the destruction.
And had it been in a regular subdivision, I don't think you would have had that much debris here or the level of damage.
Even before Laguna Heights, community organizers like Dina Nunes have been preparing for the future. She works for Border Workers United, and just this year, the organization started a new program about climate change and its effect on colonias.
Vamos a aprender sobre
We're going to learn about whether our homes are prepared with or have the adequate infrastructure to withstand a tsunami, storm, or tornado, or something else that's caused by climate change.
That's Nunez talking to attendees of one of the sessions for Laguna Heights residents. As urbanization increases housing prices and wages remain stagnant, poor people are pushed into new colonias. New laws require that they have the bare minimum infrastructure, like access to water lines. But people are responsible for connecting their property to these water lines. This has increased housing prices in colonias, so it limits the investment people can put into building their homes. As a result, housing quality in many new colonias is the same or worse than in older colonias.
But I'm worried now. I've been through a lot of areas in the county, colonias, and some of them are in halfway good shape, but some of them are not. And that's due to the housing, the lack of housing standards in the colonias.
Kovacevic said something must be done.
There's got to be something done to provide additional funding for people like that.
But he sees government officials going in the opposite direction. During the last legislative session, Representative Ryan Guillen proposed a bill that would lessen the responsibility of developers along the border by creating more lax regulations around what level of infrastructure they're required to provide.
In these recent actions to try to minimize the job of the obligation of the developers to develop land in the rural areas was totally contrary to what we worked so hard to do.
Kovacevic said the situation is a ticking time bomb. If those in power don't address the problem, disaster is inevitable, and their failure is to blame.
I'm talking about people. Hurricane comes, people run into their homes and think they're going to be safe. And the hurricane just completely blows everything. And you're going to get killed by flying debris, or you're going to be blown away.
For years, Colonia residents have faced conditions that have put their health and livelihoods on the line. Yet they found ways to manage and overcome. However, for the first time, their community's existence is at risk as they face the possibility of losing everything to climate change. Despite decades of investment in infrastructure and organizational efforts to improve colonias, the government has allowed these improvements to fall apart. And problems that have never been fully addressed, like poor housing quality, have only gotten worse. Additionally, colonias continue proliferating, and the root cause, a lack of affordable housing, remains unchanged. For Kovacevic, this means one day his worst fear will come true, and the valley will see thousands of people displaced, and decades of supposed progress in colonias will disappear. I'm Carolina Cuellar, reporting.
Catalina Cuellar covers border and immigration for Texas Public Radio through a partnership with Report for America. This special report was supported by the Pulitzer Center. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org, and you can download, subscribe, and rate us wherever you get your podcast. Tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.